Game On on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks so much to the brilliant Jenny Green. Jenny's back tomorrow to kick off the bank holiday weekend from 3 o'clock. You don't want to miss it. It's Thursday, the 29th of April, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Stephen Ferris and Fergus McFadden on a big weekend of European rugby as Leinster prepare to face La Rochelle and Ronan O'Gara.
He's paved a way for himself as a world-class coach, and he's gone and learned, and you can see by all the teams he's been with how great they've been going. I've been involved in different Ireland camps with him, and he's a great man, a great player, and obviously he's proven to be a great coach.
We've live racing yet again from Punchestown's Festival with the Ryanair's Novice Chase coming up very shortly. Plus, we've the great Barry Geraghty on the rest of today's action.
In behind them, but Classical Dream has swept through and makes his way towards the final flight with James de Burley giving chase as they come now towards the last. It's Classical Dream and Patrick Mullins who come to it with a 3-4 length lead, a little awkward but clear, and as the racing climbs the closing stages, it's Classical Dream who's been pushed clear and he's going to win the Ladbroke Champion Stayers Hurdle. Classical Dream, long time off the track, worth waiting for, wins again. Patrick and Willie take the big one.
Plus, we've Jeff Shepherd on the American football draft, Limerick's Dan Morrissey and Galway's Sarah Durvin on the GAA season ahead, and weddings. We've big news for Offaly fans too, and we'll bring you the latest on what the easing of COVID restrictions means for sport.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. We would love to hear from you. And Marie, there is no bigger story, isn't it, than the restrictions. It is. We're starting to get there. It feels
music
like
to our ears, Donica.
It absolutely is. It feels like we're shaking off a wet duffel coat or something, doesn't it? It's real. Just a bit of hope around the place. And we've been lucky our kids have been back to sport. But now there is opportunity for everyone to get back out.
Yeah, so we heard Jan saying a little bit earlier that the Cabinet has agreed a plan on reopening society and the economy. So that means that sport is going to come back in a little bit more of it, with the green light given for adult team sports training to resume from the 10th of May. And that is absolutely fantastic. So this just comes along a little bit after the return of the GAA Intercounty training on the 19th of April, and then last Monday's opening of sports facilities, including pitches, golf courses and tennis courts. So it looks like now that gyms and swimming pools are going to be reopened on the 7th of June, which again is just absolutely brilliant, because so many people have been calling out for gyms and pools. They're such an important part of people's lives, and then we're going to get competitive matches to resume as well around then. It'll be later in the summer before even small numbers of fans are allowed to attend games, but that's okay, because I do feel like we're edging towards that. But it is understood with this training coming back, it'll be non-contact in pods of 15, and then there will be further clarification on when full contact training and challenge games can recommence. But Donica, it's all moving in the right direction. We have a bit of a plan and we have progress.
It's great. And I'll be honest, just as a former player, non-contact will do me nicely.
You're going to dust off the boots now, Donica.
No chance. But of course, we always think of the indoor sports, the basketballs, you know, that they're looking for a bit of hope and a bit of clarity to when they can get back to training. And Marie, the good thing is, you would think with restrictions being lifted some bit, they can still exercise. Maybe there's an opportunity to get outside. I know it's not like for like, but if you know, there's ways and means to make your sport viable at the moment.
Absolutely. And the thing is now, Donica, when people are out training, no one's going to be frowning on them going, they shouldn't be doing that. Everybody can very soon get out, do what they want, play with their friends, kick balls around and just train in the broad daylight. None of this covert stuff anymore. Yeah. We are starting a new era and it really feels like it today. A bit of sunshine as well. It's actually all good news, really, because there was good news as well for Offaly. The Offaly County Board, Shane Lowry, has been unveiled as an official partner of the Offaly County Board. So he has a new role which will see him help to support Offaly's GAA commercial and fundraising initiatives. He will also help improve the county's underage coaching programmes and the development of educational bursaries. So he's going to have a brilliant partnership here. And he said that the reason he got involved was because he'd been chatting to Michael Dignan, who's the chairman of the Offaly County Board and obviously a very famous former player. Let's hear from Shane Lowry about this partnership and about these conversations with Michael Dignan.
I suppose it was the evening of the hurling final, and obviously Limerick won again, and I'm quite friendly with Jerry McManus, who's JP's younger brother, who have obviously the McManus family in Limerick have had a huge part to play in everything that's went on down there. Now, I want to stress that what I'm able to give to Offaly is a lot less than what they're able to give to Limerick. So, I just see what they did. And I sent JP a text that night and I said, look, I'm sure the people in Limerick are very proud and very happy and very grateful of what you and all your family have done for Limerick and Limerick GAA and Limerick Hurling. And, I did say to him in the text that I'd only love to be able to do something for Offaly someday, JP texted me back and he said something along the lines of, about the underage system and getting involved in that. That's what it's all about. And, that's where they looked at and putting good structures in place. So, yeah, I decided, I talked to my dad that night as well. And my dad, albeit it was a Sunday evening, so he might have had a pint or two of Heineken on board, but we talked about it that evening. My dad's very passionate about Offaly GAA and always has been. And, we both talked about both of us getting involved and our family getting involved, and trying to push it that way. So I texted Michael, I'm sure he did as well, and we got the ball rolling there. And then I met Michael over Christmas. I went out to the Faithful Fields out in Kilcormac. It's the first time I'd seen it since it's been finished. So, it was nice to see that. And, it's an amazing facility. It's probably one of the best training facilities in the country. So to have that there and to not have the structures in place, to fulfill the actual facility we have, it's kind of sad to see. But obviously, I've come on board now as much as I can. I'm going to try and help as much as I can. But it's, I think there's a long road ahead for Offaly GAA, but hopefully this is the start of great things. And that's kind of, we're probably not going to see any rewards over the next few years, but in 10, 20 years, if I could somehow see an Offaly man walk up the steps in Croke Park, I'd probably die a happy man. So that's what this is all about for me.
Shane Lowry there just seems to have the right approach to how he's going to manage his investment and partnership with Offaly GAA. He's looking at the underage structures. He's talked to JP McManus, who's done a fantastic job with Limerick. That's exactly what they did down there. They got the academy going. They brought the players through. They got the right coaches involved. Anthony Daly was there for a while and they went on to have massive success, reap the awards. You have to kind of look at Offaly and Limerick and see a lot of comparisons there as well, Dunica. Two brilliant traditional counties. Offaly have fallen a lot farther than Limerick have in their hurling at the moment. But when you think of tradition and the dedicated people there and just the hurlers that they've had in the past, you'd have to think that they'd be able to get back on track again. And also I think when you think of Shane as well and what he stands for and his association with the GAA there, it's just such a good thing.
Yeah, good on him. Really, honestly, Marie, fair play to him. In terms, exactly like you said, not only is he dipping into his own pocket, but he's actually given his knowledge, his time. You hear him chatting about, helping out at underage structures and putting educational processes in places. And of course, he, like the world he lives in, he'll probably want visibility and plans to see how it comes together. So I know we talk about an amateur association and it's exactly that, but you do need to have maybe, performance indicators to show, where's it all going and how we're going to improve. And to be fair, he's always shown how massively proud he is to be where he's from. Every time he goes out, you feel like he's wearing an Irish shirt, really. So fair
play. He does wear his club colours on a Sunday, so no getting away from it. And he's been known to come home after missing cut from competitions to go to championship games. But I think the key there as well, Dunica, is that he's shown faith and belief in his county. Like, he wants them to succeed and he's willing to back them all the way, and you'd be surprised how far that can push a team as well. So be interesting to see now how the hurlers and the footballers do over the next few years.
And as well, Marie, just for young boys and girls around the area to look at him every Sunday night, in the mix, and just think he's down the road, or I see him down the local club.
He'll be taking a session next weekend.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I must say it's been an incredible few nights of soccer, hasn't it? It really has. We started with the Chelsea game against Real Madrid, and then last night Man City PSG, Man City getting a good win, and it's Man United and Arsenal are both in action tonight, Marie. It's it's been some great soccer.
Yeah, I know. We were giving out about the Super League and then we see these super teams last night and absolutely mesmerised and glued to it and wondering when are we going to see it again. But look, it was great. I think there was so many question marks about Man City going into the game and just how they were going to be able to sustain their European quest, because they have fallen at that hurdle so often. And when they conceded that early goal, I thought that they were going to be in trouble. I thought they were going to fail to sparkle, as we have seen them done so many times on the European stage. But they reacted so well. They kind of held their nerve. Like, they weren't great in the first half, but they came out in the second half. They were just a transformed team. And it was a bit like Thomas Tuchel the night before. Whatever Pep said to his side at halftime, however he managed to get them going, they did exactly what they needed to. Albeit there was a couple of defensive mistakes on PSG's side, but overall Man City were full value for their win and for their performance. And I think especially when you think about the likes of Mbappe and Neymar and Di Maria and the players that PSG have and the form that they've been showing in the past, and for that Manchester City defence, a defence that there has been a lot of questions asked of in the past, Diaz and John Stones, for them to be able to just nullify an attack like Man or like PSG's. You can give Kevin De Bruyne and his passing and his ability to find space all the credit you want, but a defence like that standing up to an attack like PSG have deserved so much credit. And what I loved about Manchester City's attitude is that Pep said they weren't celebrating in the dressing room. They just see it as one step closer to that European final. They're almost there. They're not there yet, and they're not taking it for granted. But at the same time, Pep did say that Pochettino will have learned a huge amount from that game. So it'll be interesting to see what the second leg is going to be like.
Because those PSG players, they hardly do back-to-back poor games. You know what I mean? The Neymars, the Mbappes, you know what I mean? They're going to bring it next time.
Well, the thing about it is that usually if one of them doesn't perform, then the other one will perform, or somebody else will step up, and that wasn't the case last night. So much to look forward to.
Can I ask you, what's going on with Wolves at the moment? It's like people that are in Wolves don't really want to be in them, or they're afraid to get a done to the ball, or you know what I mean? There's loads of errors going on with
set piece errors. Don't
yeah,
there
you go.
There does seem to be an issue around that. All right, you just have to wonder. Would you like to stand in a wall like that?
I'd actually be a good man to stand in a wall. But yeah, that's what you need, I think. A few fellas that just they don't mind getting.
Do we have anyone maybe on the line that might be good at standing in one of these walls?
No, we are getting to the business end of the European rugby season, and Ulster and Leinster are flying the flag for Ireland. We're delighted to be joined by two of their favourite sons. We've Fergus McFadden and the great Stephen Ferris. Lads, how are you?
Yeah, good. Cheers, Donner.
Good stuff.
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks
for having me on. Fez, you be a good man in a wall.
I'm not sure about that, Donner. I was watching the match last night. It's funny hearing you talk about thinking that you know loads about football, Donna. Guy, think back in those Irish days, like you didn't even know what a football was.
You know, Fez, that he asked Mick McCarthy, was he going playing a 4-4-3 in his very first interview?
That was my first question ever.
Very good.
It
was a great match.
Lads, like we said, we're at the business end. And just before we get to the brilliant action this weekend, we're kind of 7 months since yourself and Rob Kearney lifted the Pro 14. How are you readjusting from being out of the rugby bubble?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's a strange time to go out of the bubble, Dunners. Yourself and Fez would have done it a few years ago, and you would have been able to socialise with people and even meet the players you just finished with. But with COVID-19... that hasn't been the case for me, so a strange time to finish, but I've been watching closely and delighted to see the boys are in a semi-final.
Just on that, Fez has been filling his time with golf. The golf clubs are open now, Ferg. Have you been out?
I actually was out, yeah. I managed to get out yesterday, would you believe? So I think they opened up in Belfast a week or two earlier, but that's about as exciting as it gets at the moment, isn't it?
How are you playing?
Oh, geez, not great after a couple of months off now, but we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get to it, lads. Brilliant weekend. Obviously, the two big games, Ulster taking on Leicester and Leinster taking on La Rochelle. Just looking at it, we'll start with the Ulster one, Fez, if you don't mind, because we got the teams today and there's, you know, exciting. There are five changes, obviously a disappointing result against Connacht and a lot to work on, but some good inclusions with getting Jordy Murphy back into the squad. What did you make of selection?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of the Ulster side kind of picks itself.
It's funny, it went with Matty Ray in the back row, just probably for a line-out option. He's a big man. He didn't have a good game last weekend at all, but, you know, their options are limited in the back row with Marcel Coetzee and now back in South Africa. So, yeah, I think it's a strong squad, Donegal. Out of the last six games between Leicester and Ulster, Ulster have won five of them. So, you know, any Ulster fans with a bit of hope can look at that. Before those wins have all been within 7 points. So I'm expecting it to be a very, very tight game. But you would think, like, with the win against Northampton, with the win against Harlequins away from home, that you would back them once again, Donegal, to get the win away at Welford Road. And, you know, you've played at Welford Road. It's a tough place to go, and there's a lot of fans there, but there's no fans, a bit more of an even playing field, and I'm going to back the Ulster men to go over there and get another victory.
They were disappointing last weekend, but when you bring the likes of Stuart McCluskey back in there, and that back three is exciting, Stockdale, McElroy and Balakoon. Are you excited about this Ulster backline?
Yeah, definitely. I think Stuart McCluskey's been playing well for a number of years, probably unlucky to miss out on a few more Ireland call-ups. And then you've got Stockdale is back in good form, and Balakoon is a really exciting talent as well. So a couple of dangerous players there in the backs that I'm sure Ulster will use well. But it's going to be a tough battle over there. Like, Leicester won't lie down. Ulster and Leicester, they, you know, have been trophyless for quite a number of years, and two highly ambitious clubs, really. So it's all to play for.
Just on that, Ferg, you look at that, you know, Leicester team, and you're right, they lost last week to Northampton, but there's quality players. You look at Genge, the two Youngs, Ben Youngs is on the bench, but Tom Youngs, Dan Coles, you know, George Ford. It is a quality team. It's just probably Leicester have lost their way a little bit, but under Steve Borthwick, they're seeming to get back there.
Yeah, they seem to have cleared out an awful lot of players since Borthwick has come in, and that probably needed to happen, I think. You know, since Geordie Murphy left, there seemed to be, you know, a lot of players that maybe weren't adding to the, it looked, just looking from an outside, maybe weren't adding to the culture and the standards in there. So they've gotten rid of a lot of players, and they're building, really. You know, like, I would say Ulster are definitely favourites for the game, but it'll definitely be a challenge for them.
Fez, we're getting closer to the lines, and everyone is, you know, putting their hand up. Just from an Ulster point of view, who would you think in that Ulster team needs to put in a big performance to kind of put their hand up for Warren Gatlin?
Well, I think Ian Henderson, he's back into the mix, isn't he? Captain on Ulster. I think, I'm not sure he's a shoe-in for the Lions, but he's played very, very well. So if he has another good game this weekend, then I think he'll be more or less there. You know, a lot of people talking about Jacob Stockdale before the Six Nations kicked off. He picked up an injury. Unfortunately, for me, he's been shifting about a bit in the backfield, playing 15, playing wing. So he hasn't really secured one specific position over the last probably year or so. So a big game, you just never know. It might put him in the mixer if there's a couple of injuries down the line. A few weeks in South Africa, he might get a call, but I don't think there's any one particular person. Maybe Rob Herring, who's on the fringes maybe of Warren Gatland's selection. But apart from that, Donegal, I just think Ian Henderson needs to have a solid game, and he'll definitely be getting his plane ticket.
Yeah, absolutely. Ferg, we'll move on to the Leinster game. They're taking on La Rochelle, and I know yourself and Ronan O'Gara are quite tight. Can you tell me, is he a massive Line of Duty fan? Because all of a sudden we're hearing about KBAs and all this kind of stuff. I'm convinced he's glued into it at the moment.
Yeah, he must be. You'd know better than me now, Dunners. To be honest, I haven't kept in touch with Raj that much, but in the last couple of years, but I'm delighted to see he's going so well with La Rochelle. I mean, he's travelled around to a number of different environments now, and he's picked up an awful lot, so he'll be licking his lips. I'd say part of him is actually a little bit disappointed that Johnny isn't going to be involved in this game, because, you know, he knows Johnny so well. I'm sure he would have had the lads trying to get under his skin. But yeah, between Jono and Raj, like, they're going to have those the French La Rochelle side really well prepped to take a scalp out of Leinster.
And Stephen, it feels like a massive, such a big subplot, the Ronan O'Gara factor, and not because of the Munster-Leinster element, but just because people are just curious to see what he's going to be able to come up with to try and take down Leinster.
Yeah, well, I think he's got a bit of stick, hasn't he, with the KBA, Keep All Alive thing. You know, that's been talked about for the last 20 or 30 years. The All Blacks have been doing it week in, week out. But because he's brought it up on live television, I think it was after the Gloucester game, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. But that's the way he's kind of, the approach that he's bringing to La Rochelle. He's got the players believing. He's got really quality players, Antonio, Victor Vito, you know, Gregory Aldred, Danny Preso in the front row, not to mention Big Will Skelton and Lavani Bhatia. You know, there's world class players involved in this team, but you have to get those players playing well and playing together as a unit, and he seems to be doing that very well. He's a cute guy. Rog gives everything 100%. You know, Fern knows him well, and you know him well. He throws everything at it, and as a player, that's exactly what he's done, and as a coach, he's done exactly the same thing also. So, you know, fair play to him. He finds himself on a big stage here against his old arch rival in Leinster, and he'll be leaving no stone unturned to try and get this victory.
Dunners, the man mountains there that have been mentioned, Antonio and Skelton, 22 stone and 24 stone. Yeah. What were you at your prime?
Oh, I came in when I played Munster. I went up as far as 120. What's that? Yeah.
So there, Antonio's 152 kg, and Skelton is 140 kg.
But it's the likes of Aldred as well in their back row, and Vito. Like, they have quality throughout it. The main area I probably think they probably wouldn't be as strong is at 10. And look, I know they've had a few injury concerns there. And so have Leinster, Ferg. And the big talk is Ross Byrne coming in. And for me, he's a fella that never gets the credit he deserves. He's certainly a player I would love to play with. Keeps, looks after his forwards, always keeps you going forward. And it's great to see him now get an opportunity in such a big game.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, that he took his opportunity as well, you know, a season or two ago when he started in that quarter-final against Ulster as well. And he played so well in that game, he kicked over the winner. But I think any opportunity he's gotten when Johnny hasn't played in these big games, mainly for Leinster, he's really stepped up. You know, he came on pretty early in that Exeter win, and it was pretty seamless between him and Johnny. So I think there's a little bit more disruption actually to their halfback pairing, their Kerr Barlow and West. I think they're exciting pairing, but the fact they haven't played, and we don't know if they're definitely going to be fit for the match. So, I fancy Luke McGrath and Ross Byrne to come out and talk there.
What's the dynamic like at training between Ross Byrne and Johnny Sexton?
The dynamic's very good. In fairness to Ross, he's a humble enough guy to know that, you know, Johnny is probably the best 10 in the world, and he's learned so much off in the past number of years. But ironically, they're quite similar. They play very similar. You know, they're very driven, very, very good professionals on and off the field. So, I think they're close. They're good friends. And I've no doubt Johnny is giving them every bit of guidance and pointers this week to prep them for the game as best as possible.
Fez, your 10 has to have temperament, and Ross certainly showed that coming on. 14 points down against Exeter, he strolled onto the pitch and just controlled it.
Yeah, you do want that from your 10, and especially if things get very, very tight come the end of the match. You know, his clutch kicking is unbelievable off the tee. There was some stat, I think, a couple of games ago that he hadn't missed for 20-odd kicks or something. But, yeah, he's just very, very steady. As you say, Donaghy's somebody that you would love to play with week in, week out. I've probably actually watched him more play for Leinster than I have Johnny Sexton over the last year. He's been very, very steady, hasn't he? So, yeah, I'm expecting him to step up to the plate. Any chance that he's got to step up to the plate in international rugby, he's sort of, you know, that's been a couple of starts against England that haven't really went Ireland's way. But, you know, this is a huge, huge test for him. If everything goes well, qualms about Ross Byrne being the next Leinster 10 for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years to come.
Ferg, so much has been made of it because it is Rog. But when you really look at it, Felipe Contepone and Ron Nogara, when they were playing, they used to spark off each other. But it's going to come down to someone come up with a great playoff launch. And, you know, we've seen La Rochelle, they've had some great plays already this year. Do you expect them to come up with something that can really stress this Leinster defence?
Well, so they've got the KBA, don't they?
That's all you need now, KBA.
I didn't even know there was probably a game plan for the game. At least it's KBA up on the whiteboard for them. But yeah, I'd imagine that Jono and Raj probably do have a couple of trick plays up their sleeve. But I must say, I've been really impressed by this La Rochelle side. But even taking my Leinster hat off, I firmly believe that they're not going to get as much space as they have. You know, against Sale, they pulled away in that last 20 minutes, and some of the Sale defence was, you know, there's a couple of question marks around there. I'd say Stewart and Felipe, Robert McBride, they'll all be driving in the last 10 days that you need to attack these big guys in twos and make sure that this KBA thing just doesn't happen so they don't get in behind us. And I think if you can nullify that and not let them get off to a good start, I think the policy for the team will be to try and move this big pack around the field as much as possible so that the game will open up in the last 20 minutes for Leinster and they might be able to pull away.
Fez, when you get to the business end, you really do need the experience, and the La Rochelle story coming up from Pro League 2 has been brilliant, but as we saw with Leinster against Exeter, when it comes to the real knockout stages, you need that, you know, knowledge of how to get it done.
You do, but at the same time, Donners, you know, I think these La Rochelle players just go out and express themselves and aren't really too fazed if things don't go their way at times during the game. You got to remember that Leinster are coming off the back of a defeat here as well. The Munster and La Rochelle are coming off the back of a great victory against Lyon last week. So again, where's the mentality of the side? That could be talked about. But for me, I just think Leinster, after that Saracens defeat at the Aviva Stadium, they have it in their heads that they're just going to go all guns blazing and try and get this trophy back to Dublin. And I believe that they're going to get the victory. Like, I just feel that I totally agree with Ferg. They're not going to give this La Rochelle team as much space as they want, a bit like Exeter. You know, everybody was talking Exeter up, myself included, Dunners, you know, current European champions, Gallagher Premiership champions, and Leinster, I thought, could have pulled away even more in that game. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Leinster. They have plenty of experience. Maybe James Ryan coming back in. I'm not sure if Ringrose is good to go. But if they have huge games as well, there's obviously, you know, Lions selection next Thursday lunchtime, so they could put their name in the hat for that also. But yeah, I'm going for Leinster in this one, Dunners.
Brilliant. Ferg, we don't even need to ask you. You've three medals in your pocket, and I'm sure you'd like your teammates have some more. We didn't get to chat to you when you packed it up, Ferg, though. What a teammate, what a fella to tog out with. We wish you every success as you move on. Thanks a million for joining us on Game On, lads, and we'll catch up soon.
Dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now we will be crossing over to Punchestown very shortly for the Ryanair Novice Chase. But first, Barry Gertie is with us. Barry, a dream return for a classical dream in the Champion Stairs Hurdle.
It really was, yeah. It was first run back for 16 months and he came back and he bolted up. Flooring Porter probably threw away his chance by jumping badly left. He was all the time pulling and hanging left. He just had a preference to go left-handed. He showed that in Leopardstown when he landed at the back of the last hurdle. He ducked off to his left. So he has a preference to go the other way. So I'd say that worked against him, but take nothing away from the winner. He was brilliant on the day, Classical Dream, who's been a very good horse in the past, but obviously he has had lots of injury trouble.
It was interesting to hear Willie say afterwards that Patrick wanted to ride him. He wasn't sure about him, but he said that he'd give him the benefit of the doubt, and it definitely paid off.
It did. Patrick got it right this time. He got it wrong yesterday evening with Kilcroat and Sir Gerhard, but he got it right this time. And he was a very impressive winner. He destroyed him in a Flooring Porter. Would have needed to be at his best to try and beat him.
What about the start, though? It did seem like it was quite disruptive.
It was, but it was a competitive race and everyone's, you know, scrambling for position, and Flooring Porter wasn't making life easy for the starter and everyone else, and there's a few other runners as well were keen to get on. So he's a little bit fractious like that, Florian Porter, and that's just his personality.
So the Ryanair Novice Chase is coming up very, very shortly. Is there anybody that can beat Energamin?
I don't think so. I had the pleasure of sitting on him during the spring in Willie Mullins, and he's a gorgeous horse. His form has been brilliant. He would have been a big threat to Shishkin had he made it to Cheltenham, but he had a slight little hiccup and didn't get there. But I think Captain Guinness at 2 miles is possibly the biggest threat. Jana Deal, who was a good winner last time in Ferriers over 2.5 miles, would have a big chance as well as regards the opposition, but he's coming back in trip from 2.5 to 2. But Captain Guinness has a lot of pace, and he may be the next best, but it's very hard to see an Argo beaten if he puts in a clear round.
There's a little bit of pressure though on, you know, when you think that people were looking forward to the show down at Cheltenham, it didn't happen. So almost as much as a victory, it's almost a performance is expected as well from Energamin.
Oh, definitely. But Paul Townend has the luxury of arguably being on the best horse, so he's never going to be out of his comfort zone if everything is right. His jumping has been brilliant. He has a good level of experience at this stage that he can actually relax and enjoy it, because the horse knows. He knows a lot more than he knew 6 months ago or 4 or 5 months ago.
Throw in a jockey's championship as well, though. It's also important to get the win.
It is, but I think he's enough of a head start in the overrated in the championship, so I think he's that safe, so I doubt that's in the forefront of his mind at the minute.
Well, the Ryanair Novice Chase is off. Let's join Richard Pugh.
It's racing in third, and Zarkareva is the mare last of the cortege as they begin the rise on their way up towards fence number one. I looked up down the grandstand, I can only see one man. It's Willie Mullins watching his Energamin making his way on towards the first in the Ryanair, from Captain Guinness, who's gone into second now, being chased in third by Jana Deal, and Zarkareva jumps it in four. So now they take the turn, bringing them on towards fence number two, and it is Energamin, the mount of Paul Townend, has only won today, from Captain Guinness, the mount of Rachel Blackmore in second. Jana Deal is back in third. Jody McGarvey aboard in Fairy House. Mark Walsh takes over here. And they're being chased at the back of the field by Zarkareva and Robert Power, who won this race a couple of years ago when he was aboard Shaq and Poursois. So down the hill they go, with Energamin taking them down. This race produces some champions down through the years. 93 Viking Flagship, 02 Moscow Flyer, War of Attrition, Big Zeb in 08, Undersow in 15, Duvan and Shaq and Poursois, and Undersow, a son of Denim Red, as is Energamin, taking them along. In second spot is Captain Guinness, bred locally by Arthur Fenley, and the colours locally of Declan Landy. The only Irish bred in the field, Jana Deal is back in third, and Zarkareva, the Rob Corsils, the daughter of Authorised, is last of the quartet as they go now on towards another plain one. Fence number four, Energamin, over from Captain Guinness, who jumped in second. Jana Deal now racing in third, and Zarkareva in four, and both Mark Walsh and Robert Power just squeezed away from the back of that fence, just needing to go as quick as they are, as Energamin, quite the opposite. He's going well within himself as he makes his way into the back straight. He's 3 to 4 clear from Captain Guinness, who has a Christ cruising speed. Jana Deal is just trying to keep in touch with the leading pair, and Zarkareva is last of the quartet. They go to the first of the fences over the far side. Energamin had to be clever there, because he got quite deep to it. Captain Guinness is second, Jana Deal is third, and Zarkareva's four. Middle one along the back straight now, and Energamin is really taking them along at this point. Captain Guinness back in second, and back in third spot is Jana Deal, who got tight to it, and Zarkareva's four as they go now towards the ditch at the end of the back straight. And it's Energamin, Captain Guinness, Jana Deal, Zarkareva last of the quartet as they come now towards the ditch. Energamin is over, Captain Guinness, Jana Deal is third, Zarkareva is four. Well, it's traditional I go back to the panel to see what their thoughts are. I don't think I'll have to guess.
Oh, Richard, I don't think you will. If anything, maybe he's raced a little bit fresh, but he looks to be going better than the other three to my eyes.
You'd love the way, after making that little bit of a mistake, he went down confidently and jumped the next beautifully. That said, Captain Guinness is running a lovely race. Rachel Blackmore's getting a lovely spin off him and has him in a great rhythm this time, which he did not have at Cheltenham.
Well, they now have two fences along the side of the track and two in the straight to sort them out. And Energamin, it's been all straightforward to here. Back in second is Captain Guinness, who's within about five. Jana Deal is back in third. They go to four from home. Energamin, Captain Guinness, Jana Deal, Zarkareva getting detached as they head to make their way on towards the third last, the one before the turn in. And it's Energamin in the Tony Bloom blue silks, from Captain Guinness in second towards the outside Jana Deal, as they head now to make their way on towards the third last fence. And Energamin, so much scope, it's so easy to him. Captain Guinness is second. Jana Deal is challenging for that spot now and going up on the outside, but as they turn towards home, it is Energamin who's a long way clear now. from in second, Jean Adil. Back in third is Captain Guinness, and back in fourth is Zarka Rivas. The head to on now towards the second last, and Ergamine clear from Jean Adil. Captain Guinness third now, the second last fence coming up for an Ergamine, the 10th of 11, and Ergamine, he's quick over that. Back in second, Jean Adil. Back in third, Captain Guinness, and an Ergamine's well in front. Don't forget that Jean Adil is a grade one winner at Fairy House. Captain Guinness is a smart sort in his own right, but an Ergamine's in a different class as he comes towards the final fence. An Ergamine comes to it over in front and clear. He did flick through it low, but he can afford to do that. Punches down as a place for admiring champions. Willie Mullins confirms his championship. Paul Townens confirms his championship, and this looks a champion in the making. An Ergamine wins the Ryanair Novice Chase, and second is Jean Adil. We lost Captain Guinness at the last, so Zarka Riva will pick up the third, but all very straightforward for an Ergamine, the fanatic.
Indeed, all very straightforward for Ergamine there, Barry. We were looking for a win and a performance. Did we get both?
Oh, I think so. No, that's what a future champion looks like. That was brilliant. Shishkin is probably the favourite for the champion chase next year. This fella is definitely, he's fighting for that position now. That was a massive performance. He's a gorgeous big horse. He jumps really well and he's still learning, but he was very good. He made one slight mistake down the back, but he even learned from that. And no, it was a really, really classy performance.
I know you said you were on him a little while ago. Has he improved, do you think? Could you see anything there?
Oh, definitely. He proved himself on the better ground, because all his early season form was on very soft ground, and people thought maybe he was a bit ground dependent, that he would need those conditions. But he proved today that he was very comfortable on good ground, that he had enough pace, because that's the thing where you on better ground, you need to have the pace, because the softer ground makes it a stamina test. But this fella proved he has all the pace in the world. He's proved on softer ground he stays. So no, he's what you would like to have in a future champion.
And Paul made it look easy enough there as well.
He did. It was a beautiful ride by Paul, but the horse did everything for him. He jumped really well, he travelled, and as I say, he stamped his authority on the race.
So moving on to tomorrow then, Barry, will Honeysuckle do everything that Rachel Blackmore wants her to do?
I think she will. She's obviously, she should take a lot of beating, but the ground is slightly better, which I think is going to work to Sharjah and Epitant's favour. It's going to bring it closer, but she should win. She's a very sharp price. One of the interesting ones in there is Goshen, who disappointed in the champion hurdle. He was going to win the Triumph Hurdle last year. He's very good form going right-handed, but he seems to struggle going left-handed, a little bit like Flooring Porter, only the opposite way around. So I think Goshen could run a big race, but it's very hard to see Honeysuckle being beaten. But the ground is drying, and I think that is in the favour of Epitant and Sharjah. I think they'll be closer, and maybe Sharjah could be a little bit of value.
So that is in the Paddy Power Champion Hurdle. And just from Rachel, obviously there's such a successful relationship there between the two of them. Does she do anything different or just as normal?
Very much as normal. She just does all the right things, which isn't always the easiest thing to do, to make the right decisions, split second decisions and getting them right. And she did that in Cheltenham. She was doing all the right things. She was brilliant in the Inter Grand National. She had luck on her side as well, which you need, and you need that every day you go out. But no, she's just very good. She's cool under pressure. She takes her falls. She gets back up. She just, it's doing things simple. But it's not always the easiest thing in the world to do in the heat of a race and the intensity and the pressure. But she seems to just keep getting it right.
I know there's been a few questions asked about what the pace of the race could be like and how it could affect Honeysuckle. Do you think there's going to be any issues there?
I don't think so. I think the faster they go, the better for her. She can make the running herself if needs be, but Goshen is a front runner. So if he goes off hard in front, that's going to make it put the emphasis on stamina, which is going to suit Honeysuckle, because if the ground isn't soft enough, a stronger pace will counteract that, and that will make it the test that she needs. So the faster they go, the better for Honeysuckle.
And then in the Alana Holmes Champion Novice Hurdle, which is at 6 o'clock tomorrow, Bob Allinger leads the entries.
Yeah, and he's going to be very hard to beat. He put in a massive performance at Cheltenham. He destroyed Gaylord and Masneil on the day, who's here to oppose him again. Apart from that, the opposition would look weak at this level. But Bob Allinger, what he did in Cheltenham was devastating. It was a massive performance. He quickened away from what everyone thought was a good horse, and he made him look ordinary.
Well, it has been a great few days, Barry, and hopefully another couple of good ones to come as well. Thanks so much for joining us. We are going to take a very quick break. Barry will be back with us tomorrow, but we're going to do GAA very shortly with Dan Morrissey and Sarah Durvin on the Gaelic Players Association.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now, as we await the new Gaelic Games season, there is much to look forward to, starting with the fact that it is the first time inter-county players will be represented by one association, the Gaelic Players Association. And to talk about the significance of this, we are joined by Galway's Sarah Durbin and Limerick's Dan Morrissey. Sarah, to you first. You've been playing senior camogie for quite a time now. Can you just give us a little bit of context, just to show us how big a moment this is for women and how much progress has been made?
Oh, this is absolutely huge, Marie. To think back to when I started to where we are now, like the strides that has come is unbelievable. And it's a proud day to be a member of this association and to have the two of them under the one umbrella. And hopefully, going forward, it can be something with all the associations under one umbrella in the near future.
It does feel like the start of something, all right. And Dan, just from your point of view, as a male player, look, we know that the GAA Ladies Football and Camogie are separate organisations at the moment, but it is a community. There are mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters involved in the GAA. How important is it to stand with the female players?
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, it is a very big milestone. I think at the end of the day, we're all playing GAA. We should all be under the one umbrella. So I think the more numbers and pool all the resources together, it can only be a good thing for everyone involved. Like the GPA have done an awful lot of work for us over the last 10 to 20 years, and the treatment of players has improved drastically compared to when I first came on the panel. So hopefully that will filter down now into the women's game as well. So it should be very beneficial to all sides.
So Sarah, you are seen as equal, but when you look at things like resources and at the moment when you look at funding, because as it stands, €3 million is the funding is paid annually to male inter-county players, whereas 700,000 is awarded to female inter-county players. And we know that is more of a team-focused kind of grant. But the message from the GPA is that they're calling for equitable public funding for male and female inter-county players. How much of a difference would that make to you, Sarah, just as a group, you know, even when you think of how valued you'd feel?
Yeah, like the funding would be massive in the development of our game, and especially in our players. We did this survey about before Christmas there and in the WDPA, and we found out that like 69% of players, female players, pay for their own gym, and 93% have no compensation and travel costs. And like, that's fair enough if you're not traveling a huge distance, but like if you're a student or you're coming from like to Dublin or Limerick, which we have players on our panel that are.
And Dan, just from your point of view, hearing that, and just even the figures, the fact that an average of €1,282 is paid to male players, €424 then for each female, how does that make you feel just listening to Sarah there and hearing those numbers?
Yeah, look, so I didn't realise there was as big a gap, but I'm sure it's probably the same in a lot of sports, and every sport is trying to close that gap so that females are treated equally. But like from in terms of the GPA, they've put in the enormous work over the past 10 years. Things like Sarah mentioned there, mileage especially. Like, we'd have lads coming down from Dublin and up from Cork for training 3 nights a week. So I suppose just to get expenses to kind of cover things like that, medical expenses, everything that players should really be looked after, because I know the GPA had done a survey there last year, and they found that on average players are spending up to 30 hours a week between training sessions, team meetings, video analysis and things like that. So although it's an amateur sport, the time that's been put into it from both males and females is huge. I see when we're back training, often the Camogie and Lady footballers are training back there as well, so you can see the commitment that they're putting in, and yeah, they probably don't get the recognition or the remuneration that they deserve.
And Sarah, that kind of brings us nicely along to the fixtures, really, because at the moment there's a little bit of talk that potentially the Camogie Championship might go to the winter. It's not confirmed, it's not even reported, just a bit of a suggestion that it'll be club first and that will happen in the summer and then maybe inter-county later on in the year. If that's something that does happen, how would you feel about it?
Yeah, like, it's like, the sooner we get clarity on this, I think the better. The fact that we're probably playing league now in 3 weeks' time, and we have no insight into when our championship is going to be as of yet, is difficult. It's difficult for players and especially managements that want to plan the year ahead. preferably I prefer to go with the split season. I'd prefer if we went all league, county league and championship and then the club, because it's just, I suppose, you'll get the window for your club, but you're always going to be pulled to play a county and do certain bits to keep your, make sure your gymming is up, your fitness and all that sense of thing. So I don't think putting the club in the middle and saying it's just going to be their isolation and you're going to just do your club is feasible. I really don't think that's going to happen. I would, as you say, like the speculation that's coming around and everybody's waiting every day to get some sort of clarity on what's going on. If the club happens, it happens, and we just have to kind of regroup again. Then I suppose, like, you're looking at maybe back in September, back to September till we play our championship.
And Dan, I'd say there's no better motivation than knowing there's a big clash with Tipperary looming.
Yeah, exactly. It's coming around so quick, so it's only, what is it, 10 days away now. So yeah, look, the league is going to be fairly hectic. It's 5 games in 6 weeks, and then it's only a few weeks break into championship. So yeah, look, you're well to try and win every game. So a game against Tipperary is no different than any other game. We'll try and win it.
Absolutely. Okay, guys, thanks so much for joining me. And I have to say, it is absolutely brilliant to see this initiative, to know now that the Camogie players, ladies footballers and the hurlers and men's footballers are now part of the Gaelic Players Association. It feels like it's the start of something very special, and I look forward to seeing what happens with it in the future. Thanks so much for joining us.
With Green Fern, naturally good food packed with protein.
Welcome back. Donners, my screen is frozen, so I'm just going to go straight to it.
Very good. We're straight over to the States, Marie, because we're lucky to be joined by our great teammate, Jeff Shepherd. Chip, how are you?
I'm doing great. That's how you recover when the technical...
There you go, dive on it.
Gremlins.
Gremlins, we call them, isn't it?
That's right.
Oh, Shep, there was a thing in rugby, if there was a loose ball on the ground, you just had to dive on it. It was like a grenade. So that's what happens when you get a bit of a gremlin around here. Just dive on it.
That's right.
Shep, we're getting a little bit of hope here in terms of restrictions. What's life like in America at the moment? Are you back to normality? Able to head to the gym? Go to local games?
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of that, you know, kind of everywhere. I mean, so just this week, the Center for Disease Control, which is kind of the, you know, the big government, you know, medical kind of agency that kind of has been providing the guidelines, came out and said, you know, if you're vaccinated, you don't need to wear a mask outside. I don't know who was, this is just my opinion. I don't want to offend anybody over there, but if you're outside, why are you wearing a mask? I mean, that's, you know, I mean, I understand if you need to social distance, if you can't, but that's the whole point, is to get outside and get some sun. It really helps with all this stuff. And so, I mean, you know, I've been double vaccinated now for several weeks, and you know, there's almost 1 million people in Mississippi have been vaccinated here, and you know, the numbers are huge over in the New Orleans area. You know, millions and millions of doses handed out already over here in the States. And again, you know, kind of like we talked about before with like the NBA, you know, different areas of the country have, you know, different local restrictions. And so you can do things in Florida that you can't do in California. You can do things maybe in Texas that you can't do in New York. You know, it's all going to depend on, you know, where your location is. But we're starting to see crowds going out to sporting events, and we're starting to see, you know, college football teams and NFL football teams talk about having full capacity in the stands, you know, in a couple of months when we get to the football season.
And Shep, the NFL draft is taking place, and we're going to get you to take us through all of the big picks. But I have to start with Trevor Lawrence, because I'm seeing bits and pieces about him filtering into my Twitter timeline. So I know he must be a big deal. Tell us, what is so special about him?
It's almost like there's a coordinated ad campaign by his shoe contract to get his name out around the world. You know? As they made fun of Jerry Seinfeld on Saturday Night Live, who are the ad wizards that came up with that? So you know, he's the, you know, the starting quarterback for the Clemson Tigers the last couple of seasons. He's won a national championship. He's lost a national championship game, and he made it to the final four playoffs his third year there. So, I mean, the guy's just won a tremendous amount. Look, guys, he looks and kind of reminds people of Sunshine from Remember the Titans. Excuse me. And
the quarterback with the long hair, and he's just kind of a laid-back guy. You know, he's kind of caught a lot of heat in the weeks leading up to the draft, where he's kind of made it known that, like, you know, he's not just consumed by football and all this. And I'm like, that's a good thing, you know? Like, he's got a life. I mean, he's a competitive guy, and he wants to win. But, yeah, he's, you know, going to be the consensus overall number one pick tonight by the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, so he'll be moving just a little further south from South Carolina into Florida. You know, not a lot to work with. That's why they're drafting first. And so, you know, he'll struggle, I'm sure, in his first year with some of the talent that's around him. The second pick is the New York Jets. They're very familiar with picking in the top couple of picks because they typically suck. And so they always are just really drafting very high. And they're probably going to draft another quarterback. And, you know, it's kind of like, is this going to be the guy that leads them to drafting second in like 3 years as well? You know, they're probably going to take Zach Wilson, who's been out at BYU, a Mormon college out west. And he's a little bit older. Most BYU guys are a couple of years older. They go out on a mission when they're in school. And so they usually graduate a little bit older. But really, when you get to the third pick is when it kind of starts to get interesting. San Francisco is picking third. And, you know, guys, we talked a lot on the show in the last couple of years about how they traded Jimmy Garoppolo, the very handsome Jimmy G, out from New England to San Francisco. And he's been hurt quite a bit since he's been out there. And so they may be ready to move on from him already. So do they pick the guy, Mac Jones, who led Alabama to the national championship? There's an underdog guy named Trey Lance, who played at a real small school, but he's been phenomenal. And so you kind of have to weigh the whole, what was the competition level like with him? And does he go that high? And then the Falcons pick fourth. And are they going to go and pick a quarterback and potentially, you know, try to find Matt Ryan's heir apparent? Or they have a guy who they could pick in a tight end who could be the next Travis Kelce or Rob Gronkowski in Kyle Pitts out of the University of Florida. And so, you know, the Lawrence thing, it's pretty much taken care of itself at number one. The number two pick, they think it's going to be Wilson. And then after that, there's a crapshoot for the next seven or eight selections. And think about this, guys. These are all the college football players that played in, like, the weirdest season ever in college football, you know? I mean, some guys played, some guys didn't. Some teams just are wrapping up their season in some of the smaller schools. So it's been really, really weird trying to evaluate some of these players when you listen to some of the scouts talk about, well, they're incomplete medical records, or we didn't really get a chance to see him play. It's been 18 months since he's been on a football field. It's just stuff that wouldn't normally happen. But again, it's all related to the virus.
Yeah, Shep, and we've spoke about it before, next year's NFL season will be a bit longer. We're tight in time now, but how important is it that they get these draft picks right?
Oh, I mean, look, guys, this is it. I mean, yes, you can improve your team in free agency. Obviously, the Buccaneers did this last year when they signed Tom Brady, they signed Rob Gronkowski, they signed Antonio Brown. But think about it. The Patriots were the team that drafted Tom Brady in the sixth round 20 years ago. And he led them to six Super Bowl titles. You know, I mean, this is where you lay the foundation for your team. It's all about getting this stuff right. If you make the wrong pick in the first round, especially early, it's devastating for the next several years.
Shep, very good. Well, let's hope it goes well for them all and that we have a few Jerry Maguire moments. Shep, enjoy it and we'll catch up next week. Mind yourself.
Thanks a million, Shep. That is all we have time for. We have a very busy show tomorrow. We're going to preview Katie Taylor's fight with Natasha Jonas, with Gavin Cooney, Gavin Casey from the 42, Barry Gergy be with us from Punchestown. We will also be looking ahead to the weekend soccer with Alan Colley and Fergal Brennan, and the Republic of Ireland women's team are going to find out who they will have to face in their World Cup qualifier group. So Tony O'Donoghue will be with us and he will be chatting to Vera Powell.